Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Nathan Fox, that's Ben Olson. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We have a pretty lengthy email here from Jess. You want to take it?
Yeah. Hi, Ben and Nathan. I started studying with the Demon a little over 1 month ago, and I'm loving it so far. Attending Nathan's Thursday class is super motivating. Both the written and video explanations are extremely helpful, and I love the Demon. I love that the Demon gives me detailed feedback on my performance. There's just one incredibly frustrating issue. My scores are decreasing.
So stopping right there, you know, you did the sound. She wrote like "arr" in her email. Good job with the onomatopoeia, Ben. I call bullshit.
Okay. She's been studying a little over a month. How many tests could she have possibly taken?
People just don't go down. Like, you don't go down. You don't actually go down.
Yeah.
Our approach to the test is common sense. It's not built on gimmicks. We're not going to overcomplicate it and confuse you.
Yeah.
We're going to take the natural ability that you already have, and we're going to just kind of chip away the bullshit, and we're going to provide you with some useful tools and teach you how to use those tools. And so it's either a small sample issue. I mean, it's almost guaranteed a small sample issue. That's the thing. Just people just don't go down. So I'm calling bullshit. Sorry, Jess. Let's see what else Jess has to say.
Sure. In March of 2021, I scored a 148 on my first practice test after about a month of studying every day with a Princeton Review book. Ew. So
she put the, yeah.
I was so disappointed. My fear of continuing to score in the 140s despite diligent study kept me from jumping back in until January of 2022 when I signed up for the Demon. Just 2 weeks after studying with the Demon, I scored a 161. I was elated. Yeah, that's awesome. Only up from here, right? Wrong. 3 weeks later, I scored a 154. 1 week after that, I scored a 148. Back to the beginning. All three were practice tests. What is happening? Question mark, exclamation point, yada, yada. Okay.
I'll tell you what's happening.
Taking tests to see what score you can get.
Well, what's happening is there's a lot of noise in small samples.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she started studying with the Demon. It sounds like she immediately broke out of this 148 doldrums. She saw what was possible with a common sense approach. She scored a 161. But then, rather than reviewing her mistakes, she just did another practice test, did a little worse, panicked, did another practice test, did a little worse. And now she's full on panicking and claiming that her scores are going down, but she needs to be looking at a rolling average of her practice test scores.
Well, she did give herself 3 weeks between the 161 and the 154. And I think that's about right. But yeah, I guess there's just so much that goes into a score. Are you like getting overconfident with the 161 and now rushing to complete the test? Like, I really, when people bring me scores, it's interesting on some very minor level, but I'm generally not interested. I'm more interested in what questions did you get wrong? I mean, you say this all the time, but I just want to know, like, even how many questions did you do in a section? There's some explanation for these scores. And it's like, even then, even for the ones you got wrong, okay, so you got question two wrong. What do you think of it now? Is it like understandable? Okay, well, you just messed up. Like, it makes sense.
You didn't read carefully enough, which you dropped a point that you didn't need to drop. You have to stop doing that.
Yeah.
And you know, you got a 161. Great. Let's look at the ones you missed. Where did you drop your points? You got a 148. Good. Let's look at where you dropped your points. Let's look at the ones you missed.
Yeah.
Let's fix those mistakes. That's all I care about. And people are just extrapolating from too small of a sample. and they persist on doing it to their detriment because it just interferes with their actual learning.
Okay. Well, she continues here. Let's see what she's seen from her perspective too. To be clear, I'm not writing to blame the demon. I'm writing because I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I complete at least one quality hour per day studying for every question I get wrong, including those on practice tests. I do a blind review and I make sure I understand the explanation. My studying includes a mix of drilling and sections. I even keep a journal of the mistakes I'm making so that I can identify and address patterns of misunderstanding, disadvantageous tendencies, etc. We don't really encourage people to make a journal of their mistakes. I almost wonder if you're spending...
discourage people from doing that, because I think all you're doing is you're writing down a bunch of notes and you're using that as an excuse for not really understanding. If you really understand it, then you don't need to go back to it.
Well, also you have this problem here. You said you're doing at least one quality hour per day. That's great. Sometimes we tell people you may need to do more to see progress. If a lot of that hour is getting eaten up
exactly
by writing a journal, you're not getting to as many questions as you probably should be.
Or as I'm not deep saying of understanding to do a ton of questions on the individual yeah. questions.
Yeah.
You know, if you're like just, when she says, I make sure I understand the explanation, do you really? Do you understand yeah. why the wrong answer is wrong? Do you understand why you picked it? Do you see a way to not make that mistake again? Do you understand why the right answer is right? Do you understand why you didn't pick it? Do you see a way not to make that mistake again? That's six total questions that I'm asking you for one question. And mm-hmm. like, I make sure I understand the explanation. I'm just not sure that you're actually answering all six of those questions. So I don't know that you're reviewing the question for depth of understanding. And yeah. I worry about this journal, because if what you're doing is essentially copying the explanation into your journal, you know, like, this is a necessary assumption question. I missed a necessary assumption question. On a necessary assumption question, here's what I should be doing. Like, well, okay, instead of writing it in a journal, how about you etch it into your brain by like really getting it one time?
And then doing another question.
Yeah. And then getting the next one right. It's like, she's like, why are you making systematic mistakes, right? Like, she's writing down this journal so that she can identify her patterns of misunderstanding, identify her disadvantageous tendencies. I would rather that you just fix those.
Well, I don't know that people are in a great position to identify patterns of misunderstanding. I think they're in a better position to understand what went wrong with the question they just did, do another question, and then after 1,000 questions, you might have an inkling sense of what the pattern is, but who cares at that point? Because you should also understand where you went wrong and have started to fix it.
Yeah. It's not good if you look back after 10 practice tests and go, oh, I keep confusing sufficient for necessary.
No, that's not helpful.
What? In one question, you should have fixed that. And if you didn't fix it the first time, you should have fixed it the second time. It's like shit like that is just like, if you actually understood it once, then you wouldn't make that mistake again. So I don't know that I think the journal is wasting time. And I have to double down on this. I really think that people use things like that as an excuse for not understanding.
This seems important. It's taking up a lot of time. So
we agree that it's definitely taking up a lot of time, but I want to make that other point, which is I see people writing down notes because they're like, oh, that seems important. Yeah. I'm going to I'll write that down. Yeah.
And I'll come back to it, but they never actually do.
I got it. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, correlation, causation. Yeah. Got it. And they like write it down and they don't understand it.
Yeah.
They wrote it down. They made some notes. They're keeping a journal, but they didn't actually just fucking understand it one time.
Yeah.
And that's like, instead be stickier in class. Like when I say, does anybody have any questions? I genuinely want to know if you understand it or not. And if you still don't understand it, I want you to raise your hand, or I want you to just unmute yourself and say, no, I don't get it. I don't get that. Please tell me you don't understand it. I'll explain it 10 different ways until it clicks for you. Once it clicks, I don't think you need to write notes anymore.
You know, I think there's an analogy here. You talked about looking up vocabulary words last week.
Yeah.
On the Thinking LSAT podcast, I think it was. And I've been doing that a lot, actually. I had started doing it right before you mentioned it, and now it's like that motivated me to do it even more, reading, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I hear a word, and let me just get 100% clarity on that by looking it up. I look it up, and it's like, okay, now what I'm doing right now makes a lot more sense because I just heard that word, and now I have a clear understanding of what that word means. Versus, oh, that's kind of a word I don't really know. Let me write that down. At what point? So then I hear it again. I'm like, oh yeah, that's one of those words. It's like, I don't fully understand it. Nothing's happening. That's what's going on with this journal. It's like, oh, that's a word I don't really understand. Let me write it down. Okay.
No. Yeah.
Fix it.
Exactly. The LSAT is common sense. I'm trying to, and I understand that you might not understand it today. I get it. That's my job, though, is to help you understand it today, not tomorrow, today. So like the keeping a journal of these mistakes so that the next time you make the same mistake, you can identify a trend. I would much prefer that you just understand it in common sense terms and see how easy it is and see how much sense it actually makes so that you can then stop making that same mistake.
She continues, I'm also healthier than I've been in a very long time. I essentially overhauled my entire lifestyle to improve overall brain functioning and thus increased my chances of improving on this test, hydration, salads, workouts, and all. Okay, it seems like a little bit too much. I think these are good things to incorporate into one's life, but I also feel like you can try to tackle too many changes at once and spread yourself too thin.
Yeah.
As opposed to just like, well, why don't you do a question here, whether you're in your optimal health or not, and see if you can really understand it and explain it to someone else. Yeah. So the next time you encounter it, you can answer it correctly. Well,
she also mentioned salads, but she did not mention sleep.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, as far as something that's going to really move the needle, you can eat all the salads you want. I don't think it's going to help compared to sleeping,
meditating.
Right. Like let's focus on the things that really, really matter. And yeah, nutrition, that's great. You're feeling better about yourself generally. That's great. But like brain function is dramatically improved by sleeping.
Yep.
And she mentioned a bunch of different things there, but not like the biggest, most important one. So not saying she's not doing that, just she didn't mention it. Okay.
She continues, I can hear Nathan's response already. Yes, yes, I know. 3 practice tests is too small of a sample size, but does this particular extreme decrease in scores?
Stop. Jess, you're committing an actual LSAT flaw. That is a flaw of logic that you just committed. Okay. There are LSAT questions that trade on exactly this flaw, where they acknowledge in the facts that the sample size is too small to draw any conclusions. And then they go on and draw conclusions from the small sample size. This is an LSAT flaw of logic that you are committing. So I'm teaching you an LSAT lesson here, but I'm also I continue to call bullshit. You have not demonstrated to me that there is any decrease in your scores. Because according to your own acknowledgement, 3 practice tests is too small a sample size.
So I agree.
Whatever comes next, I don't give a fuck, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, we'll give her her day in court, I guess. Does this mean I'm not capable of scoring in the 170s eventually?
Does your complete lack of evidence indicate that you are not capable of scoring in the 170s? No, it doesn't.
Is this kind of decrease normal?
The decrease that you have not established in evidence? What decrease?
Was my 161 just a fluke?
Well, no, it was one data point. So was your 148. So was your 154. The truth is, your ability right now, you're a 154 plus or minus seven. Like, you have a wild range of pluses and minuses because there's lots of shit that you don't understand. So don't make too much of the 161. Also, don't make too much of the 148. This is what people do when they insist on paying attention to small sample sizes.
My plan is to take the LSAT in April, June, and August to apply in September. Is that a ridiculous plan given my performance? Can you solve all my problems? Kidding. She wrote kidding. Okay. Just hyper-focus on the next question you do and understanding that question.
Yeah. April...
I don't know if you'll be ready by then, but don't. Well, it doesn't matter. You could be.
You don't. Okay. The date that you need to worry about is Wednesday, March 16th. Wednesday, March 16th is the deadline to register for the April LSAT. If your practice test scores, multiple scores indicate that you might be ready, my guess is no. Like, I don't think you should probably be taking the April test. You're averaging somewhere in the 150s, yeah. Probably. You've got a wild amount of fluctuation in your scores. There's lots of shit you don't understand. You haven't been studying very efficiently because you're not digging deep enough into each mistake. And so in 2 weeks, if your practice tests are dramatically improved, then maybe you sign up for the April test. Probably not. I think you probably need to be looking at June for a first attempt. But you don't need to make any decisions now. You don't need to decide until, again, the deadline to sign up for April is Wednesday, March 16th. That's at least 3 weeks from now. As we record.
I don't think that's likely, but I just want to double down on this Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, right? 80% of your results are going to come from 20% of what you do. And we talked about sleep, but I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about anything except for that 20% that's going to make 80% of the difference. And that 20% is what you've been talking about, which is understand the next question that you do. But even if you didn't get sleep, right? Like, yeah, that's helpful. And I want you to get these things in order, but I don't want you to be distracted by them. Like you're distracted by your journal. You don't need to do anything else except turn off this podcast, go drill a question, and learn how to do that question correctly and fully understand it.
One question at a time, Jess. I'll see you in class. Please push back, okay? Don't let me or any other teacher steamroll you. When we say, got it? Is that clear? Any questions? We mean if there's 1% of a question, if you're not entirely 100% sure, I don't want you writing that shit down in a journal and coming back to it tomorrow. I want you to understand it now. And then don't even worry about keeping that journal. Once you understand it, we'll move on to another question. But let's not worry move about on the to the next question or the salad. Let's not worry about any of that other shit until we understand this question that's in front of us right now. Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.